the Oakdale Christian Centre podcast. We've recently had a visit by the church's mission to Jewish people. In this recording, Ray and Jill tell us about CMJ and the work going on in Israel.
Bless you, Ray, Jill.
Well, good evening, everybody, and it's such a joy to be here and to arrive here safely. And as I was saying, we're very thankful that we were able to travel in the light and not in the dark. It made all the difference. So even so, we made one or two mistakes, but we're here, praise God. And we represent CMJ. Now, I know you have had people come here from CMJ before, Rosa Blanford in particular, and she's done a lot of wonderful work going around different parts of the country. And it's a joy to be able to share with people like yourselves something that is close to our hearts and which we believe is so vital in these days, even as we see some of the things that are happening around us. Jill and I have been married now for just over 60 years. So we're not doing too badly, are we? And we've got three lovely daughters and nine grandchildren. They're all in this country in different parts. One family is in Bristol, and that's why we happen to be now living there. And we come here today from Bristol. We've had association with CMJ ever since 1988. So what's now some 37 years altogether. And we felt God was calling us to minister abroad, and he led us to CMJ. And we found ourselves out in Israel for some time, 14 years almost. And I'm ordained in the Church of England, and I was for 8 of those years, I was the rector of Christ Church Jerusalem, which is in fact the oldest Protestant church in the Middle East. It was a privilege that was just amazing, and we never ceased to thank God for the opportunity of going there and of meeting so many Jewish people, and particularly Jewish believers, and of course Arabs as well, and seeing how God could actually unite both Jew and Arab together in him, in Jesus. Which is a great joy, and what we really have that sense of a vision for reconciliation. But Jill's going to tell us a little bit about about what we've been doing and a bit more, so I'm going to hand over to her now.
I wanted to say a word or two this evening about something called the Mercy Ministry, which is a ministry which has come out of Christ Church. And when we were there, it was just a very little thing, but now it has developed, and the money which is given to the Mercy Ministry goes towards helping Arabs and Jews and Romanis and Armenians, whoever is in need in the Old City of Jerusalem and in Judea and Samaria as well. So it's grown and grown, and I have a few cards on the table which I made specially for the conference last year. And the proceeds for those will go to the Mercy Ministry. And I've just, even this morning, had a little report about what's been happening this last few months. And apparently 160 iPads or tablets have been bought to give to the children who live down in the Ashdod area and whose schooling had been so stunted, really, because of the war and because they just couldn't be safe to go out to the schools. So this has transformed the lives of all those children who were just trying to do it online and were only getting to school perhaps 40% of the time. And now with these wonderful tablets, they're able to really fulfill about 90% of the time that they're supposed to be in school. And I think that's wonderful, and my heart is very much for the Mercy Ministry, because I think it's, again, a reconciling thing when a congregation and a community supports both Jews and Arabs. And when we were in Jerusalem, we were in charge of a guest house and a coffee shop and a bookshop, and in our guest house, on the staff, we had Jews and Arabs working with us, and it was quite a demonstration of our love for both. Our calling was to the Jew first, but also to God's people, the Arab people. And that's still very much close to our hearts. So, was there another question?
Well, yes, I was going to ask you another question, actually. You and I now live back in the UK. And have done now for the last, 20-something years, 22 mm-hmm. years. And do you still feel somehow that Israel's your home as well?
I do. And during this time of war, I felt I was going through it with them in a tremendously deep way. We have many friends there. And during this time, we've been in touch with a lot of them, texting, phoning, writing, and just going through some of the traumas that they went through on a very small scale compared with what they're facing. But certainly, I have to say I lost a lot of sleep in those early days. And part of what we do now, of course, is we're interceding for the Jewish people. So that's really part of our work now. But my heart is there and I want to go back. But it's been quite difficult. We wanted to go in November and we couldn't. We wanted to go in January and we couldn't. We have a tour booked for next month. No, not next month, May. But we won't be going because we cannot gather people. We can't go around being enthusiastic about what we're going to do. So we have to let go, and we just feel it's the end of that season for us. But we're hoping to go ourselves, aren't we, Ray, and see our friends and just be there and help them in any way we can.
I think in a funny sort of way, when you've actually lived out there for a time, there's something about Jerusalem that remains part of who we are. It is there. And as soon as we get to Jerusalem, we feel this is home. This is sort of where we belong. Even though we hardly ever go there these days, I would encourage anybody who is able to go out there and to join a tour sometime to do so. It really is so special.
It's life changing. I mean, people who we've taken say how it's changed their lives, and when they read the Bible, it's just coming alive in a fresh way. So, I mean, our heart is to do that, but I think we have to say we're past it, really. And we love doing it. We've loved doing it. But anyway, never mind. There's lots else we have to do.
Do you know which is the only book of the Bible, the Old Testament and the Apocrypha, that has never been found among the in the Dead Sea Scrolls? This is a bit of like answering those opening questions for 10 on University Challenge or something like that. But do you know which is the only book in the Bible that doesn't mention God? Esther. And do you know what today is? Today, well, it's just finished now because it's sundown, but today is the Feast of Purim. And Purim is the time when Jewish people remember what took place in the Book of Esther, when the attempt was made, of course, to destroy the Jews. And an edict was given that they should be wiped out. And of course, that was wonderfully reversed. If you've read the Book of Esther, you will know. It's a wonderful book. And it certainly has something there that is hidden in it. There's some hidden meanings there as well, which I think are very significant. So I'm going to ask Jill now to come and read a chapter out of Esther. In fact, Esther chapter 3.
After these events, that's the events of what happened before this chapter, King Xerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. All the royal officials and the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. Then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" Day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated. For he had told them he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. In the 12th year of King Xerxes, in the first month, the month of Nisan, they cast the par, that is the lot, in the presence of Haman to select a day and a month. And the lot fell on the 12th month, the month of Adar. Then Haman said to King Xerxes, "There's a certain people dispersed and scattered among the peoples in the provinces of your kingdom who keep themselves separate. Their customs are different from those of all other people, and they do not obey the king's laws. Is it not in the king's best interest to tolerate them? If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I will put 10,000 talents of silver into the royal treasury for the men who carry out this business." So the king took the signet ring off his finger and gave it to Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. "Keep the money," the king said to Haman, "and do with the people as you please." Then on the 13th day of the first month, the royal secretaries were summoned. They wrote out in the script of each province and in the language of each people all Haman's orders to the king's satraps, the governors of the various provinces, and the nobles of the various peoples. These were written in the name of King Xerxes himself and sealed with his own ring. Dispatches were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with the order to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and little children, on a single day, the 13th month, day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. A copy of the text of this edict was to be issued as law in every province and made known to the people of every nationality so that they would be ready for that day. Spurred on by the king's command, the couriers went out and the edict was issued in the citadel of Susa. The king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was bewildered.
Well, thank you very much, Jill. So we only need to go, we need to go no further than the scriptures to see how the Jewish people have been under extreme pressure. And indeed, they've been marked out, not only by God, because he chose them for himself, because he loved them, and he had a purpose for them. And of course, ultimately, the purpose was that it was through them that the Lord Jesus, his beloved son, should be born. And of course, Jesus, as far as his humanity was concerned, he was a Jewish man. And here we find there was a plan to eradicate them altogether, here in the scriptures. And it's interesting because we're often asked about the situation with Israel. What do you think about what's happening? And I say, well, where do you want to begin the story? And there are all sorts of places where you can begin, but wherever you start, there's another beginning, because it's a history that goes back right to the very beginning. And it's interesting that the person who is behind this plan to eradicate the Jews was none other than Haman. And Haman was a Hamathrophite, a descendant of Hamadatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. And Agag and his family were part of the Amalekites. So in a sense, you can go right back to Exodus 17. And I was going to refer to it briefly now, because this was the very first enemy that the Israelites came across when they crossed over the Red Sea. And the Amalekites came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, choose some of our men and go out to fight the Amalekites. And you know what happened? Moses stood on the hill. And he had to raise his hands. While his hands were raised, then Joshua had victory over the Amalekites. When his hands got a bit tired, then somehow it went the other way. And so along come Hur and Aaron and hold his hands up. And keep praying. What a wonderful encouragement it is, by the way, to us to keep praying and not to give up. And I was so glad to see on one of your slides here, you obviously pray in this church. And, God sees and knows and honors that. And victories come as a result. But it's interesting because it goes on in the last verse. It says this in Exodus 17, verse 15. Moses said, for hands were lifted up to the throne of the Lord. The Lord will be at war against the Amalekites from generation to generation. It was as if what had been begun there to trouble and to defeat the Israelites was something that would go on right through the generations. And lo and behold, up comes Haman, who is evidently a descendant of Amalek. And I think we see here something of a spiritual principle of the way in which the enemy, and by the enemy I'm meaning Satan himself, who right at the beginning wanted to thwart God's purposes, even in the Garden of Eden. And of course, he did his very best to do so. He didn't succeed, but he did throw a bit of a spanner in the works. And it took a long time, really, to be able to recover from that. But God is never going to be defeated. His purposes are going to be worked out. I'm not going to give the whole story of what goes on. It's not time tonight anyway. But read the New Testament as well. Read what Paul has to say, particularly in Romans chapters 9 to 11, for instance, of the great purpose that God has still for his old covenant people. Not only that they should recognize that Jesus really is their Messiah, but also that they should be the people who are drawn back to the place where they originally lived, because it is their the promise was that land was for them, for generations, for all generations. And we've seen something of that happening within our lifetime. And I remember when I was brought up as a lad in a Brethren Assembly in Southampton, the excitement that there was in 1948 when the State of Israel was formed. There was a sense among the folk there that this was a moment when a prophecy was being fulfilled. And we've seen something amazing happening. We've seen over the years the number of people who've been coming to recognize who Jesus really is, that Yeshua, as he's called in Hebrew, is indeed the Messiah, the chosen one of God, the anointed one, the one that the Jewish people are really looking for. So that Jewish believers see themselves not as different, they don't see themselves as Christians, although they are believers, obviously, but they see themselves as completed Jews, those who have discovered as Jewish people who Jesus really is, their Messiah. And not only their Messiah, but their Messiah who is going to come again. And it's interesting that in these days, Jewish people, I'm not talking about ordinary Jewish people who are wanting to be faithful to their understanding of things and their understanding of God, many of them have a deep messianic expectation. And we have heard people say, well, when the Messiah comes, they're expecting him. I'll ask him, is this the first time you've been or the second? They somehow, I think, some of them anyway, have a sort of sense that, who is this Jesus? And whereas there are some who won't have anything to do with him, they wouldn't touch the New Testament, there are others who are curious and who are interested. And some of the troubles that there have been over the last several months have in fact provoked people into renewing an interest in desiring more. And I know that there have been many who have found life in Jesus, even in these past months. And for that we give thanks. The nation of Israel has been traumatized since October the 7th, 2023. And it is never going to be quite the same sort of country as it was before. But there's a deep sense of their destiny and purpose which God has for them. And I believe that this is a time when people like you and me can be praying into that situation, that more and more the veil will be taken away, eyes will be opened, and that the Jewish people will actually discover who Jesus really is, that he is their Messiah. And there are more younger people who are really taking a place within society as leaders, as young leaders, who are able to be witnesses to that truth. Pray for them. Pray for these young people who were drafted into the IDF, the Israel Defense Force, and who know what it's like to be in the thick of battle. They can be scarred. Some have been given their lives for their country. And there are no families who haven't in some way been affected by this war. Pray for them. And be praying too that that there may be a restoration of a sense of peace in whatever way this can be accomplished. And particularly, I think one of our prayer needs, of our heart cries, is that the rest of the hostages might be freed. And I think that's a good prayer to be praying. But I don't want to get too much onto that, but I can't help referring to it simply because it is so relevant and it's so topical and so important for us as Christians, as believers, to be praying for Israel and to be praying for God's people. And to be praying because we live in an atmosphere of such marked anti-Semitism. What we have here in the book of Esther is indeed an example of anti-Semitism of the worst sort. It's the sort of thing that was somewhat mirrored, of course, by Hitler in the 1930s and 40s. A deliberate attempt to wipe out the Jewish people. And we know what happened in Europe. And we know what would have happened in the Second World War had the German forces been able to come further east in North Africa and overrun Egypt. They wouldn't have stopped there. They would have gone into the land of Israel before the state was formed. But there were towns and kibbutzim villages of Jewish people there. And we know what would have happened to them. You see, what man intended for evil, God intended for good. And humanly speaking, out of that Holocaust, the terrors of the Second World War, out of the ashes, if you like, of the Holocaust, the State of Israel was formed. And God's purposes can be seen to be worked out. We can't always understand his ways. But we see, I believe, in anti-Semitism, whatever face it may take, of the Satan, the enemy, seeking to stir up trouble against Jewish people. We see it in our own land. We see it because of the hatred that there is against Jewish people on campuses, on university campuses, and in other situations. And ordinary people who are afraid to go around, ordinary Jewish people, to show that they are Jewish. They might want to hide the fact that they are Jewish so that they won't be troubled. That's the sort of atmosphere in which we live today. And I think it's good to remember it. But to go back to the whole idea of Esther for a moment and what happened there. You see, if it weren't for the fact there was this one guy, Mordecai, who wouldn't bow down to Haman, and probably in the normal state of affairs, he might get irritated that this was so. But it was because he realized that Mordecai was Jewish, that he plotted and made this plan to get rid of the whole of the race. And the name Purim comes from this idea of P-U-R, pur, which is a word that was in the, it means a lot, in other words, casting, drawing a straw, as it were. And they were going to decide what month this was going to happen. And as they drew the pur, it came to the Jewish 12th month of Adar, the 12th month, which is where we are right now. And then it was decided on the 13th day of the month, which was today, and the Jewish calendar. And of course, the wonderful thing was that Mordecai was able to say to Esther, maybe it is you've been put here in the king's household for such a time as this. I don't know whether any of you have the Bible app. If not, I would certainly recommend it. You can get it on your machine, which we all carry around, don't we, these days. And the Bible app gives a verse for the day. And today's verse happened to be Esther chapter 4 and verse 12. Verse 13. Mordecai sent back this answer: do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this. God's purposes for each one of us are purposeful. He has a reason why he's placed us where we are. And it's not just on our own, it's in a fellowship. And you obviously have a lively fellowship here. And that's a great blessing. But it's a responsibility. It's a responsibility. Because it means you have a responsibility towards the community out there. And that this place can be a light that shines in this township. And God will bless you as you do so. You've been brought here for such a time as this. But for Esther, she had a crucial role to play. And if you haven't read the book of Esther recently, then do so, because it's an intriguing story, to say the least. As we know, Haman, the gallows that Haman had built for Mordecai, in fact, were the very gallows on which he himself was hanged. A bit of a gruesome story, perhaps, but that's how it goes. You see, evil eventually will not prevail, however much it may appear to be so. And I think that we as believers need to have that faith in God, that we are on the victory side. And no fear can daunt us, no foe can haunt us. You know, we are on the victory side. And it's good to recall that and to allow our faith to grow and blossom as a result. Anti-Semitism is there in the scriptures. It is there in the enemies that Israel faced, and particularly Amalek. It is highlighted supremely in the book of Esther. And in each case, through prayer and through a determination, sometimes in subtle ways, to achieve the victory, God gave the strategy to do so. And we see what happened. And Haman was overcome. But God needed the right people in the right place at the right time. And Esther, of course, was the one who was there. It's interesting because her name actually means hidden. And it was as if God placed her in that foreign royal palace, in a totally non-Jewish custom, in a circumstance. And she became the wife of this heathen king. It sounds all a bit compromising in a way, but it was God's purpose. And we can see how, hidden away like that, she was able to work the work that was needed at that particular time. It's a wonderful book, so do read it and rejoice in it. But I think it does remind us of the fact that this whole question of anti-Semitism is something that arises because I believe the enemy of souls, Satan himself, recognizes how important the Jewish people are to God's plan. And that is a continuing dynamic that happens today. We can see that right at the beginning, there was this clash, even in the family of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. There was the whole saga with Ishmael and Isaac. There was the whole issue between Jacob and Esau. And some of them were the progenitors of the Arab peoples, the Ishmaelites. And it's not as if God was rejecting them, because part of his purpose in establishing the covenant that he made with Abraham was in order that they might be a light and a witness to other peoples. They weren't just receiving God's grace for themselves, but in order that that grace, that sense of hope and trust, might be spread further abroad to others. And that is always God's purpose. And I love that the story in Luke's gospel at the beginning, when Jesus, soon after Jesus was born, when he was taken to the temple. And who did he meet there but Simeon? And Simeon recognized that this is the one who is the Messiah, who God had told him, the Spirit had told him that he wouldn't die until he'd seen the Lord's anointed. What an amazing amazing prophecy that was given to Simeon. And he said these words: "Now my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have set forth, a light to lighten the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel." The light to lighten the Gentiles and the glory. Not for the Gentiles and not for the Jews, but both. And how important that is. And Paul is able to say that the gospel is the power of God to salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and then also to the Gentile, to the Greek. You see, God's grace covers everyone. Thank God he's met with us, and that is wonderfully so. And you know, as we recognize this, we see somehow the need for an important strand of interest that we have as Christian believers, who aren't necessarily Jewish ourselves, to be prayerful and advance the purposes of God in reaching out to Jewish people, because it is his desire that all his people should be saved. And in Romans 11, Paul says that eventually all Israel will be saved. I'm not going to go into Romans 11 in any depth this evening, but simply to remind ourselves that this is God's ultimate purpose. And he says, "I do not want you to be ignorant of this mystery, brothers, so that you may not be conceited. Israel has experienced a hardening in part until the full numbers of the Gentiles has come in. And so all Israel will be saved, as it is written. Jews and Gentiles together." And that's the way in which the purposes of Satan are ultimately going to be thwarted. And part of what Paul speaks about is the ministry of the one new man, the coming together of both Jew and Gentile, those who are near, the Jew, and those who are far away, the Gentile, so that we can discover a oneness that there is. And this is something that we began to discover personally when we were living in Israel, that for believers, the Jews may have their ideas, their view on things. Some of the Arabs have a very different view, and yes, there has been that enmity between Jew and Arab over the centuries. And yet, in Jesus, the barrier has broken down. There's a new awareness, a new love for one another, and it's beautiful to behold, a ministry of reconciliation. And if we can model that in some way and pray towards it, then that is so good. Just as I bring this part of the evening to a conclusion, I think one of the things that we need to remember on this day of the celebration of Purim is not only that God does give the victory, he does put the right place, people in the right place, so that the enemy will in fact be defeated, but also that nothing can thwart his ultimate purpose. Sometimes it's difficult for Jewish people to really believe that, as Jews. sometimes it's difficult for us as believers really to see that God has a purpose that will not be thwarted. And we need by faith to lay hold of that, to pray that God's hand will be seen in miraculous ways, that the power of the gospel of Jesus will be made known in our day amongst younger people, that the veil will be taken away and that they'll see the one who himself is the light of the world and the light of the world for them. Which brings me back really to the whole question of CMJ and its purpose. CMJ was originally known as the London Society for the Proclaiming of the Gospel to Jewish People. Bit of a mouthful. It got changed, the name got changed eventually to something that is a little bit easier to communicate, really, in that sense. Not so much in your face, maybe. The church's ministry among Jewish people, coming alongside them, seeking to engage with them, seeking to encourage those who are believers, seeking to educate the church into the Jewish roots of the Christian faith, seeking to teach. We're very much behind the messianic schools that there are in Israel. Mrs. Schools for Hebrew-speaking schools for children of messianic parents. And seeking to encourage good education among Jew and Gentile, so that God's purposes can be seen. Now, we were referring earlier on to the Shoresh study tours, and Shoresh is a Hebrew word for root, R-O-O-T. And the purpose of those tours is really to discover the Jewish roots of our Christian faith, and particularly in the land of the Bible, to be able to open the scriptures and see how the Bible, which we love, is a Jewish book. Even most of what we call the New Testament is mostly written by Jewish people. And when one can see this and discover how Jesus himself spoke as a Jew, acted as a Jew, then it's not surprising that we as Christians can also be better educated as a result of that. And that's what CMJ is seeking to do. And I would want to, and Jill and I would want to encourage you to be engaged in this way. We got a certain amount of material over here, which we can we'll be hovering around that table afterwards, and you can have a look at some of the stuff that we have there. But information that will enable you to see a little bit more of what is actually happening, both in this country, because CMJ was working amongst people here, Jewish people here, but also, of course, in Israel itself. And that work goes on in different aspects. And just one thing I would like to mention as we draw to a close, and that is that part of the ministry is to, in Israel, has been able to set up sort of mini museums. Now, that may sound a very odd thing to be doing for a mission agency, but the reason is that the Jewish people, the Israelis, are fascinated by their 19th century history. Now, you may think, well, 19th century history, well, they weren't there then, were they? Well, the state of Israel, of course, wasn't started until 1948. But Jewish people were there right back when CMJ first went there in the 1820s. Not very many of them, granted. But it was because CMJ, it wasn't called CMJ then, as I just said, had the vision of going out there. And it was hard. It was tough. It was a tough assignment, a really tough. I mean, even in terms of health, for instance, and people, some of the early missionaries actually died very soon after they'd arrived, simply because of the disease. Life's a bit different today in that respect, but they had this vision of establishing something there, And by God's grace, it has actually had an effect on the whole formation of what happened during the course of the 19th century. And these little museums actually set this out. And of course, you can't tell the story without telling a little bit about the motive behind it. Why did people go out there? Why did they start hospitals? Why do they begin schools and a home and a house of industry and so on? Of course, because of the love that they had for these people, motivated by Jesus the Jew himself, the Son of God. Pray for the Jewish people in these days. Pray because today they've been able to rejoice in the historic victory of Purim and what happened in the Book of Esther. Pray for them as they sense the pressure that they're under from modern day Amalek, the spirit that somehow seems to run through Hamas and all that implies, and the sense of still wanting to eradicate the Jewish people, even in the land that they can now call their state. It's a complex situation, we all know that, but God is doing a good work, and CMJ has the privilege of being a part of that. And I commend CMJ to your interest, to your support, to your prayers, and indeed, maybe for some of you actually to go on a Shoreditch tour, hopefully starting again before too long. Have a look at the table afterwards, and we'll guide you through. Perhaps I can just close with the Aaronic blessing. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up the light of his countenance upon you and give you his shalom. Amen.
Amen. Appreciate that. Thanks, Ray and Jill, for that. Wonderful. Excellent. God is working. God is still. Yeah, and you will be brought to the kingdom for such a time as this. God's good. Thank you. Bless you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode. To find out more about our church, including our service times, visit www.oakdalechristiancentre.org.